You saw me go out, perhaps. So last week, I didn't put my stole on. Did anybody notice? I noticed afterwards, and halfway through the service, I'm like, I don't have the stole on again. This is the stole. This is the thing that I have been working so long to earn that I wasn't allowed to wear until I was officially ordained. Okay, so I thought, well, maybe I'll get it on closer and closer to the beginning, and at some point I will have it on before the service actually starts. We'll see. Yeah. Oh. Punny. Okay. So, someone I know from Western Massachusetts facilitates marriage and parenting workshops, and the title of her most popular one makes me chuckle. Do you want to be right or do you want to be in relationship? How many of you can identify with this? Maybe partnered, maybe parenting, maybe because you have parents yourself. Do you want to be right or do you want to be in relationship? Sometimes they come together, sometimes they don't. So, like our reading said this morning, we could practice religious freedom at home. On some Sunday mornings, and I'm not taking names or pointing fingers, some of you do. I, too, have done this and probably will do it again. Yet, we choose over and over to gather together. I have heard many of you tell me that you come here for the community. And sometimes that seems like it's an affirmation. You come here for the community, and sometimes it seems like it's kind of a negation, but not for the religion. But you could do community elsewhere. You could join a bowling league, a Rotary Club, the League of Women Voters, an activist group. You could serve on the board of a nonprofit that does laudable work. And in fact, I believe many of you do. And that is awesome. But here you are, gathered in this place at this time with its moral and ethical, and I am going to proclaim it, religious identity. We choose over and over to be in relationship with one another here, in person, in this gathered space, with these gathered people, as well as with our ancestors. They're here, friends, the people who came before you. And also here, the people who are coming after you. They're here too. Over and over, we gather together. And when we do this over and over, we risk being rubbed the wrong way. We risk hurt and pain, confusion, disappointment, misunderstanding, conflict. I know that this is not news to you. Over and over we come together and we risk holy abrasions. This is by no means easy, but I believe we are better for it. In August, some of us here in this room watched a video recording of the closing worship at General Assembly, which is our national annual gathering of Unitarian Universalists, and the Reverend Nancy MacDonald Ladd. We heard some of her words in the reading. She's the senior minister at River Road Congregation in Bethesda, Maryland. She delivered a kicker of a sermon. In that sermon, she quotes spirit-filled justice activist named Mickey Scott Bay Jones, who says this, "Relationship is the sandpaper that wears away our resistance to change. Relationship is the abrasion that agitates enough to make a way forward. Relationship, consistent and ongoing encounter with people and perspectives different than our own. It smooths the way for the sacred, even as it rubs us raw." Why do that? Yes, relationships can be profoundly rewarding and elementally renewing, but most relationships, like most people, are far more complicated than that. So why take the risk? Why, once the abrasion is there, once some tender part of us has been rubbed the wrong way, rubbed hard, rubbed raw, why do it unless we know, or at least hope, consciously or unconsciously, that there is something bigger and better and transformative in the making? Though there are many reasons why someone might risk that sandpaper rawness for the hope of sacred smoothness, I believe our creedless religion, this faith without dogma, this Unitarian Universalism, calls us to do just that, over and over, to gather together. Perhaps you have heard that before. We are a covenantal religion, not a creedal one. And it sounds good. Okay. Because that's a hard one. What are Unitarian Universalists? That elevator speech, it could be hard to explain to people. But what does that mean, covenantal? Well, the simple definition of covenant is promise. I want to emphasize that it means ever-renewing promise. Like our prayer, it asks of us to begin again. It actually asks of us to begin again in love. If you have ever taken part in teaching religious education here, or perhaps you grew up in it, or you have been part of committee meetings of any ilk, you have encountered the process of covenant making. In the secular world, the closest thing is like having ground rules for a meeting, right? Raise your hand if you want to speak. Abide by confidentiality. Don't bring boring snacks. I'm pretty sure that's in the affirmation covenant. If it's not, it should be. We'll tell them that. But that is just that's merely an outward product. And that is a secular version, like an agreement rather than a covenant. So I want us to think about what sets a covenant apart from a regular agreement or understanding. And when I've been thinking about this and reading about this, I've come upon these words from Victoria Safford. She was actually the first Unitarian Universalist minister I encountered when I joined this ragtag faith movement in 1995. She says, "A covenant is not a contract. It is not made and signed and sealed once and for all, sent to the attorney for safekeeping or guarded under glass in a museum. A covenant is not a static artifact, and it is not a sworn oath. Whereas, therefore I will do this or I'll die, so help me God." No, a covenant is a living, breathing aspiration made new every day. It can't be enforced by consequences, but it may be reinforced by forgiveness and by grace when we stumble, when we forget, when we mess up. Living and breathing and aspirational. Covenant is both a noun, agreement, promise, and a verb, an action and a process. And though having an agreed upon and written covenant is helpful, especially when there is conflict in our midst, frankly, it is the process that interests me more. I want to know what it means day to day, month to month, year after year. How do we live out our shared lives together? How do we stay here instead of going and finding our corner to lick our wounds? For instance, just the other day in a meeting, I said something flippantly. "It's not the first time, and it won't be the last, though I wish it would." embarrassment rising. I noticed it as soon as the words left my mouth, and I even observed the impact on one of you. In the moment, I did not follow up. The course of the group's conversation continued on, and unfortunately, it left the mind, and I forgot. But the next day, I received a request to talk from one of the people in that conversation. And so we met, and that person shared their upset, and we talked about it, and I was so thankful. I was thankful for their courage to raise this directly with me, which is not a particularly insignificant thing given that you have a new minister and you don't know how I'll respond. I was thankful for living out our covenantal relationship that recognizes we try our best. We sometimes stumble. We hold each other gently and accountably, both at the same time, and we continue on in relationship. It was a small thing, this flip comment I made, but the direct communication, the exploring together what it meant and what it did not mean, that was big. And it was a good practice for those times ahead when bigger hurts and bigger disappointments and bigger conflicts will come into our shared lives together, because they always do. It is the nature of our joining together. So what does it take for us to feel the inevitable sandpaper and stay fully present, available to possible transformation and deeper connection? Reverend MacDonald Ladd, the one who delivered that kicker of a sermon, she says this: there is a holy abrasion of the spirit born in deep relational encounters across differences. We as congregations and as a movement exist to be instruments of those very encounters. And yet we know that there are so many ways to hide from the discomfort inherent in holy abrasion. There are plenty of opportunities presented each and every day in the life of a church to go back, so that we back away from the hard work, and continually and repeatedly we want to relate meaningfully to one another in the world. So with covenant in mind, I have four questions for you, and I'm going to speak them aloud, pausing with each one to give you time to take it in. But because I know some of us are visual learners and listeners, these four questions were printed on a colorful piece of paper. Hopefully you have it in your order of service. So I ask you, as you hear my voice or you read these words, to take them in, to know them as your own, and see where they take you. What promises, what covenant, what promises have you made to the world? What promises have you made to this place? What promises have you made to this people? What promises have you made to yourself? It takes a long time to write a sermon. One never knows if it's any good, actually. It doesn't matter how long. It's not like if I spend 20 hours, it will be a good sermon. No, there's no guarantee. But I've had plenty of time to be reflecting on this concept, covenant and promise, in preparation for here. And so it's led me to wonder about my promises to you, my covenant with you. So I want to share a promise I have, but it's risking holy abrasion because I'm going to talk about money. I'm going to talk about stewardship and our shared responsibilities to this congregation. Some of you are already feeling the itch of that sandpaper. I know it myself. Like the vast majority of Unitarian Universalist congregations, this one has a canvas drive, providing you with the opportunity to practice generosity with the goal of sustaining this congregation now and into the future. Annually, typically in the spring, the leadership asks all of us to make a pledge, which is yet another word for promise, of how much financial generosity you will direct to this congregation in the coming year. And this allows leadership to draft a budget which pays for many things, your minister's compensation, but also the religious education program, the music program that serves the mission of this congregation, the bagels you eat in the gathering room, the process that supports your youth learning high-quality sexuality education, as well as clarifying their own beliefs and commitments, maintenance of this beloved, unique building, the salary of staff. It goes on and on. Just this week, the Canvas Committee closed up last year's pledge drive, reaching out to 29 individuals or families from whom Tess had not received a pledge for this year, but who had pledged in the past. And much to our joy and gratitude, 22 shared their pledge, and our deficit budget is now $13,500 closer to being balanced. This is joyful news, friends. So deep thanks to all of you who made this commitment, whether it was just this past week or last spring when first asked. But with this work going on, how can I be in covenant with you if I do not walk with you in this especially crucial way? Currently, I maintain my membership at my home congregation, and as such, I pledge there. Yet you called me to be your minister. So it seems essential, at least for me, and ministers actually, we differ on this subject. We have different legitimate opinions about this. It seems essential that I respond with a financial promise. I've given you my heart. Here I am with my body and spirit. But I answer your covenantal call more. So this year, I am matching the pledge that I gave to my home congregation, bringing my total pledge to 4% of my gross income. I said that out loud. I want to say gulp, right? This is more than I have ever, ever pledged. And I feel a noticeable catch in my throat. It touches a deep sense of scarcity that has dogged me my whole life and that shows up uninvited at inappropriate and inconvenient times. Yet this promise I make to you awakens in me a sense of abundance and generosity and connection, which is what I want to grow in myself. It is what I want to help grow in you. So this promise from me, this part of my covenanting with you, seems not just important but necessary, and not necessary because there's a deficit budget, although it helps that, and not necessary just because it walks the walk of our talk of ensuring that this place exists for the future to come, but because of a spiritual need. And so when I think of those four promises, I think it answers all four of them. I've shared this information with you not for a pat on the back, but because in nearly every Unitarian Universalist congregation with which I've been affiliated, talking about money, talking about financial stewardship, it can sometimes feel like we're causing or feeling those holy abrasions. The place where our relationship and our covenant get one another tense. It rubs us hard and sometimes raw. Each of us brings such a different set of realities to this conversation, and sometimes we don't take that gently And yet, I believe an ongoing conversation about money and stewardship is a deeply spiritual thing. And it is one of the ways that we find our smooth paths into sacred space and connection and possibility. There is a whole other aspect of covenant that is essential to its nature. Basically, it's disappointment. James Luther Adams, one of our beloved theologians from last century, he says we are promise-making, promise-breaking, promise-remaking creatures. I know that to be true. And so when I come back, I have next Sunday off, I'm going to my stepdaughter's wedding. When I come back and preach on the 16th, let's talk about disappointment, how we always disappoint each other and still come back, how I will disappoint you and still be here. So may our lives live worthy of promise making. And in the midst of broken promises, may we have what it takes, courage, humility, a sense of deep connection that allows us to ask forgiveness and to grant it. May we occasionally know times in our lives what it is to be right, but may we more often feel what it is to be in relationship. And may we be instruments of holy abrasion. Amen and blessed be.